All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 812-333-2665. There is lots to talk about tonight as we are prepping for the Colts' first game of the year, which we will have for you here right here on these airwaves this Sunday on WGCL. 3 o'clock is a pregame, and 4 o'clock is a kickoff for that. And, of course, us being a Colts network, we'll have the Bob Lamy pregame for that broadcast. We've got high school football continuing this Friday night with North and South. We've got college football continuing this weekend with a pair of games, Pitt at Penn State and Auburn at Clemson. And Indiana is traveling to Virginia at the same time. We've got Colts breaking camp with their roster and all kinds of changes. And Philip Dorsett's gone and a new quarterback's in, but he's not going to play. And we don't know what's going on there. So plenty of Colts, plenty of everything to talk about. But we start with IU football. Last Thursday night, they invited Ohio State to town, and everybody came with them, including all of ESPN, it seems. Game day was there and just about everything else, a couple different broadcasts. So they rolled out the red carpet and all of it for Indiana and Ohio State, and that was a lot of fun to be a part of, but the game, not quite as much. It was entertaining for about three quarters, and then the depth and the speed and everything else of Ohio State, as you might imagine, took over, and the Hoosiers couldn't keep up, but Glass, they gave them a game, two and a half quarters, three quarters, if you will. They, offensively, Richard Leggo was on the money with several of his receivers, both Simi Cobbs in particular. They certainly gave him a run, gave him a heck of a game. The defense stuck in it for a while, but ultimately, Ohio State's just got more guys. And, I mean, we could look back to halftime and maybe say there's some adjustments that were made, but it really did look like wear and tear just took their toll. On the Hoosiers, it ended up at 49-21 at the end of the day, so a four-touchdown game, rather, doesn't show up so well in the scheduling. But, you know, I don't know that that told the entire story as far as the Hoosiers were concerned. They do have an injury with Nick Westbrook now out for the season and a knee injury. But, you know, there's a lot to talk about here, and I think the first thing is, you know, the result isn't what we wanted, but I thought the Hoosiers, you know, did what they normally do against the likes of Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan, and that is you stay with them for about three and a half quarters at the end of the day. They've got a heck of a lot more talent and depth than you do, and it seems to always take its toll against the Hoosiers.
21-20, 4:56 to go in the third quarter. Indiana had the lead. And they led 14-13 and half. They led 7-3. They led. You can go back and through it. Indiana only trailed 3-0 until that point in the third quarter, where Ohio State got the two late touchdown passes. You know, with 5 minutes to go, and you would have told me Indiana's up 21-20 in the third, I think everybody in the building would have taken it twice, right, and not questioned any of it.
See what happens.
But two huge plays to end the third quarter knocked the momentum out of the team, knocked the air out of the building, and that's what happens with really good teams. What do really good teams have? They have depth, they have physicality, and they have speed. And you saw Ohio State. Those two big plays were 59 yards and 76 yards or 74 yards. And what were they? Guys running away from other guys on Indiana's defense. It was a tough matchup on the crossing route underneath. It was Raekwon Jones, and he wasn't going to catch
right,
Campbell or whoever that was going through there. Again, a guy that can burn. Campbell did drop a wide-open touchdown pass in that game as well. JT Barrett also overthrew a couple guys that were pretty wide open in the end zone.
Yeah.
So you needed a little luck. The Hoosiers had it. They had some great individual plays, no doubt about it. But as Tom Allen mentioned on Media Day on Monday, he needs more depth. He needs more time for his twos to play, to give his ones a break so they don't get caught in those situations where they're not dead on their feet late in the game. That didn't help anything. That's been an ongoing struggle for Indiana University for some time, Dave. Bill Lynch talked about depth. Kevin Wilson talked about depth. Yep. Tom Allen's talking about depth. That's nothing new. And it doesn't happen overnight. And until you get some time where you can get some guys a blow here and there, those guys have to be able to play more than one or two plays a night. Or what are the offenses running these days? 85 plays a game?
They had 58 at halftime.
Well,
they remarked them between the two teams is 100 plays in the first half.
So
it's 58 to 42.
So there you go. So they probably ran another 40-something because they're trying to kill the clock late in the game.
Yeah.
But the point is you have guys playing all those plays. Then you throw the guys in on special teams like we know, punt coverage, T. Gray Scales plays punt coverage. Chris Covington plays punt coverage. So they're playing a lot. And you need some depth. You need some physicality. The passing game for a half was great. Unbelievable to see 38 attempts at halftime. School record 65 when it's all said and done.
Yeah, the Hoosiers had 95 plays, by the way.
They did 60 punts. And 65 of them were passes, I believe. Or 68 of them were passes. So the balance, you need a little bit better. But I thought the first half Indiana, and even through most of the third quarter, did a good job of keeping Ohio State off balance. They didn't have. They had 1-3 and out until the second half. So there were some definitely some positive things there. I think people get wound up looking at the box score too deeply, lose some of that focus. I even asked Richard Lego about this on Monday. I said, hey, how much easier is your life going to be when the running game gets going? He says, well, he goes, it's not like we're not running the ball in the sense. He goes, I was in formations where they gave me the run-pass option, and he said, in 11 of those, I went to a pass because they had 7-8 guys stacked in the box, daring us to run it. So why should I run it into the line for no gain? 11 of those passes, Tom Allen told us, went for 6 or more yards, averaged 9 yards an attempt.
And you saw how
he made some great plays there.
You saw how accurate Lego was.
Much better, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's had times last year where he was. He had times where he wasn't. But, I mean, he was on the money almost all night long.
He was. But so it was a little, for the older folks, it was kind of a little West Coast offense-y. You just take one step and throw it. That's as good as a running play. You don't have to physically block the guy in front of you if you're on the offensive line.
Right.
The other number that stands out on why the running game didn't work, Tom Allen told us. How about this? He counted, they played 7 defensive ends and 5 defensive tackles. They had 12 guys rotating
Ohio State?
So that on that rotation.
That's 3-hole rotation.
That's 3-hole rotation. Yeah. So you want to talk about depth and wearing down?
Yeah, I joked on Twitter that Ohio State is 2.5 deep where the Hoosiers are 1.5 deep at at their spots.
Indiana
and that's
played
about right.
6 offensive linemen. Harry Kreider was the only one besides the starters to play.
And that's not so unusual about offensive line.
No, it's not.
But every other spot to go 3 deep is crazy.
But when you're fighting a guy that's playing a third of the plays that you are, that's a little bit different. And fighting guys that are going to be drafted on for Sunday, like everybody has mentioned. So I think it was, in summary, it was a fair fight. I think the better team won. I don't think there's a whole lot of question about that. Indiana didn't, quote-unquote, give the game away. They didn't make life easy for Ohio State. I think that was the most interesting thing I took away from it. They didn't play perfectly, but led 21-20, 4:56 to go in the third quarter. So that I take that out of it. Have we seen Indiana teams not break through and not finish? Sure, we have.
Right.
But it's Ohio State, and they're historically good up front. And I think that it's not an excuse. I think you have to take that into your argument. If you expected, if your season as a fan suggested that you were going to beat Ohio State, and if you didn't, you're done with IU football, well, I don't think that's a very smart way to look at it. Because Indiana has beaten Ohio State about 3 times in history, I think, when we went back and counted them, 87, 88, somewhere in the 50s. Or maybe not even in the 50s.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 10 or 11 overall.
But it's in the 20s and whatever else. But I think you saw enough positive stuff. I thought you saw enough stuff from Mike DeBoard that's going to make you interested. You throw into the tight ends, Watercutter and Thomas had great games in that sense. You didn't see Lego get killed. And you talked about the offensive line, and I talked about the offensive line, how that was unquestioned, untested perhaps. I believe Lego was only sacked 3 or 4 times in that game. And when you're talking about guys on that front 7 who are being talked about by scouts and everybody else, to me, that's a fair number. Would you have loved Lego not to fumble it back there? Absolutely right. Would you have loved him not to, again, get in some situations where he made maybe a throw or two that he wanted one more second to throw? Sure. But Ohio State's really good. That's what I took away from that. Their defense is really good. I thought IU's defense hung in there pretty well until the running game just started wearing them down.
Well, there's a couple sides of the ball to talk about. So we'll start with the offense because we've talked a lot about Richard Lego and the lack of a running game. As you mentioned, the thing that stands out to me with the IU offensive line going into it was how little experience they had. But coming out of it, it is how well they did in the passing game. Now, there were some sacks of Richard Lego. Those happened later. I mean, they did a great job. And the play calling had something to do with that also. But you know what? Early on, Richard Lego usually had time to throw. They didn't need him to hold on to the ball for a long period of time, but there was not instant pressure. They weren't blitzing him like crazy, but at the same time, they weren't getting beat like crazy either. So, you know, I give the offensive line a lot of plus marks in pass protection in general. It's pretty hard to keep a guy clean all game long anyways. I thought they did a really good job. Now, the flip side of that is Ohio State was committing bodies to the running game, and they got absolutely no movement in the running game. And does that hurt? Yes. If you're one-dimensional, it's always going to hurt you. You need to try to be balanced. Sometimes you can't, and that's what happened here. They couldn't really get it going, so they more or less abandoned the run. Going forward, the running game will be more so than it was this weekend. They gave it up essentially at one point against Ohio State. They need to be better, and I think they will be better. We don't know what this team will really be like running the ball until it faces the next three or four teams it faces.
Right, that are not that, defensive fronts that Ohio State has.
They were getting it shut down against one of the most talented, if not the most talented front they're going to face, and they gave up on it, so they went just to the pass. So it's not indicative of the rest of the season. But they did hold their own in the passing game, so there's a lot of good to come out of a young offensive line.
The other part of the running game, which will improve, the other part of the offensive line will improve, is Brandon Knight's back to practice.
And helps to have your starters. Yeah.
Well, it does. and again, that's not a knock on the guys that played, because you just told me what a good job and solid job they did overall in the passing game. But Brandon Knight's a guy that's taken Big Ten snaps, who's faced guys with long arms, quick hands, strong feet, All-Americans, et cetera. He's seen that. He's been there and
done
that.
Any quality and experience you can get back is a huge help.
And the sooner he gets back, obviously, the better. And obviously, the game plan's going to change, too, coming up this weekend, because they don't have that front seven to deal with. They will get more creative with their run. And if you knew the front seven was going to be as loaded as everybody did against Ohio State, why would Mike DeBoer show anything from his bag of tricks against it? That day was going to be difficult to win the ground game against Ohio State. So why give any other team something to scout and say, well, here's how they got their yards against Ohio State. This is what worked for them. Mm-hmm. Now Virginia's got not much to look at, as you saw. 27 carries for 17 yards. Three or four of those were sack yardage or attempts.
Richard Leggo did get sacked five times.
Well, I have four on the officials, but whatever. Yeah. It's close enough. It wasn't two of those were late. You're exactly right. One was a play that was an incomplete pass on replay that was exactly right where he pushed the ball forward. That was a huge break in Indiana's favor. So you get Knight back out there. You're going to put your best five linemen out there. Does he play this week? I don't know. I don't know when he started practicing. So that's going to help things, because Knight's played a lot of positions, including tight end. So he's got a really good feel for how it works
and
at
athleticism
this level.
Athletic enough to play tight end.
And then I think that's what we're talking about. So if you need a guy who can pull a little bit, if you need a guy who can work right tackle, wherever they're going to stick him, left tackle, whatever it is, Kronk's going to play left tackle. Let's forget about that. Right tackle, whatever, he can play just about any position, which is completely, completely beneficial for Indiana. So you're not going to play that front seven every week. Let's remember that. Write that down in marker somewhere. Yeah, you don't have to erase that. A lot of people are going to struggle with that front seven, no doubt about it. And Indiana, in the running game, you saw some flashes from Ellison. He's not afraid to run hard. He's not afraid to hit the hole.
Hard to make a lot of judgments on the running backs. You got a couple passes caught by Mike Majette and Cole Guest.
Majette made a great catch.
Yes. I mean,
great one-handed catch.
Yeah, no question.
Decent
going down
pass protection as well.
Deep in Ohio State territory. So, I mean, there's not a lot you can say about those guys other than that they didn't stand out for huge mistakes.
What stood out, though, was the receiving core, including tight end Ian Thomas. They like a little bit better blocking from him in the run game, but that's probably to be expected. Remember, Thomas caught three passes last year. Caught five passes and two touchdowns against Ohio State. So you saw what you missed in Simi Cobbs.
He's another big wide receiver, by the way, Ian Thomas. Yep. And you're full of big wide receivers. And you saw why they like these big wide receivers, because they were making every play they could.
Donovan Hale, Luke Timian did all the stuff that he needed to do underneath, running good routes. That's why you threw the ball 68 times. You have to have someone to throw it to.
Yep.
And Indiana showed you some solid depth there. So from the offensive standpoint of things, Dave, I think one of the things that Mike DeBoer said was very interesting in the running game. He said, you know, we knew we weren't going to move the ball in the running game a lot, so we had to get our chunks of yardage if we wanted to keep drives moving through the pass. Mm-hmm. And they said the way that they thought they could get at Ohio State was getting those chunks of yards and moving the ball, not grinding first and 10, second and 9, third and 7.
Yeah, a couple years ago they ran the ball 50 times and got
52.
And got something like 102 yards or something.
It was
not a lot of production, but they said specifically we're going to try this so that we can keep them off balance and make sure we committed to
game.
It. This group, they knew they couldn't really do much of it and improved it.
So they wanted to get some chunks out of that, and they did, to be fair. They had matchup problems in the first half. They couldn't find anything on Simi Cobbs. If you remember, he had four throws in a row at him.
Yeah.
And the defensive back couldn't get off the field because they went no huddle.
Got a first down.
For 18.
Two incompletions and a touchdown.
And a touchdown. Yeah.
all right in the row. Same exact thing.
Yep. And then the next guy that came in and tried to guard him the next series, they went right down the field on him as
well. Ohio State had three defensive backs, two corners drafted in the first round of last year's draft.
Malik
Hooker. So they were coming in with some young guys.
They did. And, you know what Indiana did? They exploited it. They didn't sit back and say, hey, this is how we run our offense. This is what we're going to do. This is what I liked about DeBoer. He saw weakness and went after it.
Yeah.
And you saw that with Ian Thomas. You saw where Timian went. And I think Lego looked as good as I've seen him look. And if he did that against Ohio State, I'm allowed to be optimistic as an IU football fan.
I want to point that out again and add the wide receivers to that, because I just mentioned the talent that Ohio State lost in the defensive backfield. But if you watch this game, the defensive backs that played for Ohio State played this all really well. I mean, they really did. What you saw was Indiana making plays from the quarterback position, putting it absolutely on the money all day long to just the right spots where his guys could make the plays, to his wide receivers making amazing adjustments on the ball, going up strong, coming back shoulder for stuff, going high for stuff, going behind their guy for stuff. You name it, they were making big-time plays on both the quarterback and the wide receiver side of things. So your point is exactly right. Right now, you're looking down the line at the rest of the season for the quarterbacks and the wide receivers, and that kind of play continues, they're going to score a ton of points, because this wasn't just they picked on some young DBs that had no idea what was going on out there. Those kids were talented. Those kids were in position. Those kids are physical. They just got plays made over them by guys that were doing better than they were.
Imagine what the passing game is going to do when they can play action pass.
When you got balance and they have to worry about
that.
Exactly right.
They're going to have even more room to operate. And play of the game, great play by Majette. But Ian Thomas getting that first foot, back foot down.
Yeah.
Well, the front foot was just out. His toe was out. For a guy who caught three passes last year, to make a play in that game and be that aware of his training, and that's something that Semi Cobb should do.
Right.
That's something that Timian's going to tiptoe
You'll
and
expect
do.
Expect them to do.
Or
right.
Donovan
Have
Hale.
The great footwork. Sure.
But how about the big 6'5", 235 guy dragging the back foot first? And I'm happy the replay got it right, because
yep.
if they were looking at the front foot only, they were going to see it was out,
yep.
and they did get it right. So positive replay. Replay helped Indiana a couple times on the Lego fumble pass and then the Thomas touchdown. Those were big, big momentum plays in that game that Indiana needed to stay in it at the time.
Yeah, and remember this. At the end of the day, Indiana had three turnovers compared to none for Ohio State. It was always going to need a couple turnovers in its favor to create some takeaways to stay in this game all the way to the end. And so that really is your difference, and that's not a criticism of IU, but they needed it in their favor to win, and they didn't.
Well, and the other part we'll talk about, the defensive side of the ball, mm-hmm. almost, what, 600 yards?
Yeah.
And red zone scoring 6-for-6?
Yep.
That's something they need to work on. But when you're out there all day, too, especially in the second half, that's tough.
Again, 20 points through 2.5 quarters, almost through the end of three. You need help on both sides, no question. We got to talk about the defense and the special teams when we get back from the break. 812-333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with David Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Quick programming notes for you. Folks, you need to check out our web page, WGCLradio.com, because we got so much going on here now that fall has hit and football season is here. Starting tomorrow night with the kickoff game of the NFL, starting at 7:45, the Kansas City Chiefs are at New England. Friday night, we've got high school football returning. North is at South. Chalk Talk is 6:30 and kickoff is 7 o'clock for the Crosstown Rivalry game Friday night. Saturday, we've got a doubleheader of college football. Pitt is at Penn State at 3 o'clock, and Auburn is at Clemson at 6:30. A pair of good games. And then Sunday, we've got the doubleheader. We start with the Colts. This is the Colts radio broadcast. So this is Bob Lamy, pregame 3 o'clock, kickoff 4 o'clock as the Colts head to the L.A. Rams. It's hard to keep track of who all's in L.A. nowadays. And then we have a nightcap also as the Giants are at Dallas Sunday night. Monday, we are going to have an abbreviated show because there is a Monday Night Football doubleheader starting at 6:30. New England is at Minnesota, and the Los Angeles Chargers are at Denver for the nightcap. That is a 9:45 game, so a pair of them there, and we are on for a short period of time. We will start as of the 18th on Monday with a almost two-hour show for you, leading you into Monday Night Football every week. So an extended In the Zone is almost here, folks, just around the corner. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Talking IU football, they lose 49-21 at home to Ohio State on ESPN and the entire car wash and everything else they call it there in ESPN land came to town. And glasses, we were talking before we got off the air. The offense held its own. It moved the ball. It ran 95 plays. despite a lack of running game, was able to throw for 420 yards. The running game was disappointed. It should get better immediately because you're not playing Ohio State every week. I mean, Michigan won't have that kind of defense. Penn State won't have that kind of defense. Michigan State won't have that kind of defensive front. To the point where you just don't run the ball at all. They will get better. They will be better instantly. But on the flip side, disappointing in that you gave up almost 600 yards offense, almost 7 yards a play. You did not create a takeaway, as they call it, or a turnover. Wore down. I mean, there's no question you wore down with 3.5 or 4.5 minutes left to go in the third quarter. It was 21-20. You'd only given up 20 points. You'd held for a couple field goals where maybe, you know, if Kevin Wilson were the head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes, he might have gone for touchdowns in his old life.
He called timeouts like he was going to set something up.
Made you wonder. So the defense kind of did its best for a long time until it kind of cracked eventually.
Well, the interesting part of it was twofold for me. Indiana's defense did fine. They held Ohio State to the first two times. It was field goals. So
yeah,
that was
exactly
good. They kept him out of the end zone, so that one touchdown was a lot better than two field goals. We always joke about that math, but it does work. But it almost was a repeat of last year in the sense where you just didn't feel that Ohio State was pulling all the cards out of the pile.
Yeah.
You felt like in the first half it was going to be, all right, let's hang around. Let's try to run the ball. Let's try to run pass. Let's try to mix them up a bit. Let's try to throw a little bit on first down. Let's just be here and do some stuff. And then in the second half, you come out and you get a steady diet of tailback right, tailback left, quarterback keeper, option.
Yep.
All the things that gave Indiana so many problems last year in the second half. When Barrett stopped throwing last year because he was inaccurate, that's why they stopped throwing the ball. He couldn't complete any passes.
Yep.
And that hurt Indiana because – he runs better than he throws. And anybody wants to argue that, go watch the tape and tell me about it. Go point out the missed touchdown pass. Point out the two missed touchdown passes.
There's a reason
the overthrows.
There's a reason they didn't blitz him, and they did. That's because they wanted to let him stay in the pocket. They wanted him to try to pick among guys and into coverages.
Exploit that
exactly,
lack of accuracy.
He's not that accurate, and he makes some bad decisions sometimes. But when he has a chance and it's in short yardage and they can run the ball, you can forget about it because he's that good.
J.K. Dobbins is pretty good as well for a freshman. He made Indiana. Again, you had to be. You had
that was
to find
the best
a way.
Freshman running back performance in Ohio State history, just strictly yardage wise.
That is, and
that was some pretty good running.
He didn't have a 90 yarder in there. He didn't have a 75 yarder in there. He had just chunk after chunk, and Indiana's defense again got into some situations where they were trying to take something away, and when you try to take something away, you give something up.
Yeah.
And whether it's dropping eight and making Barrett be accurate and hits a guy in a crossing route and the guy outruns everybody,
right?
Well, that's good offense because that's what you gave him. He had to put the ball in stride. He goes to the side of the field where the backup linebacker is and runs right by him.
That's what happened on that play. Seven or eight people into zones, and you let a guy go right through the underneath of it and then run through the rest of your defense.
Yes.
You've done something. You've done the right thing to make him do it. You've done the wrong thing in how you played it at the end.
That's right.
There were a couple of those, no
there
question.
Were, but, and there were. And they, and,
but largely it worked out. I mean, that's how they hold him to 20 and three quarters.
JT Barrett had two completions in the last 4 minutes of the third quarter, one for 74 yards, one for 59 yards.
Yeah.
That's 133 of his 202 passing yards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. JT Barrett did not hurt you through the air.
No.
JT Barrett had one dropped in the end zone. I'll give him credit on that. Pass was perfect. Campbell dropped it.
Yep.
There was also a couple guys open in the end zone that he overshot, and Indiana dodged a bullet there. But that's what an inaccurate quarterback does. So when Ohio State had a turn to let's not start taking shots down the field, or we stopped taking shots down the field, and they kind of gave IU a steady diet of run the ball. And then that big line of Ohio State's who has some really good players on it.
Yeah.
And Indiana's rotating in guys. They're trying to find anybody to get in there and stop a little bit of the bleeding. Once Ohio State went up two touchdowns, you knew it was going to be all tailback left, tailback right option. That's what was coming. And the Hoosiers struggled to get off the field. The part that jumped in Tom Allen's mind was he lost the first down battles in the second half. Lost them on offense where you didn't have down and distance time to convert offensively, so you're three and out five times.
Yeah.
And then on the defensive time, it's second and four, second and three, and that opens up the entire Kevin Wilson playbook for Ohio State, which makes them even harder to defend if Dobbins running and JT Barrett wasn't running hard enough. Scales was your leading tackler. That's hardly a shock in any of this at all. One guy's name I know was not mentioned during the broadcast on my side, Jonathan Crawford.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting that I did not point to his name once in 60 minutes of football.
Yeah, Tony Fields got in on a
Tony Tony Fields had a really good third and a half quarter there. Yeah. He was good. Dutra was making some noise.
They played
as well.
A lot of two deep safeties. You know, the other one I barely heard all night was Marcelino Ball. I mean, neither one of those guys was making a lot of big plays.
He had a good stretch and then disappeared for a bit. And then they weren't, to be fair, why would you run at Marcelino Ball? They were going away from him because Ohio State can pick and choose where they want to go for him. Or you run at a guy. That's what they usually say about guys that maybe aren't involved in the line, the hybrid role. He gets a little bit of freedom to do what he wants. If you run at him and make him fight off blocks instead of letting him chase you down from behind, it's not a bad theory to have. So Ohio State's good. I get it. Indiana's defense didn't get any stops in the red zone. We told you before the last break, 6 for 6. That ties into your takeaway discussion as well. So when teams get in the red zone and you don't force them to miss a field goal, or you pressure them for a bad snap, or you hold them to that grayish range, do you go for it on 4th and 6? Do you kick it? None of that went to Indiana's favor. Everything that Ohio State did in there came away with points. And, Dave, that's going to be deflating to your defense. Your defense is holding and holding like a dam and just trying to keep it back.
Yep.
But not one time did you get a little momentum switch in a muff kick or a 38-yard field goal that goes wide right. You didn't get anything. No takeaways, no momentum plays in that department, and no momentum from the defense on big sacks, anything like that. It's a tough day at the office.
Look, again, Indiana lost the turnover battle 3-0. It needed to flip that to truly win this game. The last two times Ohio State had the ball, it came off of turnovers, and they were both converted into touchdowns. Of the last 6 times Ohio State had the ball, 5 of them were touchdowns. That's, you know, an example of...
You're out of gas.
You're out of gas. They're figuring things out. You're, you know, running out of bodies and so on and so forth. Maybe you tack on those last two because of turnovers. One was from your 11-yard line. I don't think there's any question about that. So, I mean, if you want to take those off, just as an example to throw out here, a defense held out as long as it could. You know, it did a great job forcing field goals early. It did a great job getting punts, you know, from Ohio State, getting the ball back. It never got the takeaways. And, again, it was going to need to lead by 3 in the turnover battle, in my opinion, to truly have a chance to win this game.
Yep,
and it went the other direction. So it's no surprise it's 28 at the end of the day.
And you didn't give the defense any help offensively, as Coach Allen was pointing out. When you're 1st and nothing – and 2nd and long and 3rd and long, and you're 3 and out, and they go right back on.
Yeah.
No time to catch their breath. That, again, that's what Ohio State does to people. Ohio State makes you get out of your comfort zone and figure out a way to beat them.
And you have to be careful with that offense. When you've got the ball for that short of a time, when you are that quickly 3 and out on your defense, you got to be careful sometimes about that. That's what I always have complained about with this hurry up is, hey, you know, sometimes you do have to look at what that's going to do to your defense, especially if the other team's going 3 deep and you're going 1, 1.5 deep.
The tempo works.
You got to keep an eye on it.
The tempo works very well when you get 1st downs.
Well, here's what you need.
That's the issue.
It works when you get touchdowns, too.
It does.
If you jump up 3 touchdowns on Ohio State because you're going at this crazy tempo, then I'm all for it. And that's the other part of the problem is the Hoosier offense did a good job early and continued to move the ball through most of the game, but it never jumped up so high that it had some kind of leeway for the
not
defense.
Not many teams are going to do that.
No,
against,
of course not. Not against
Ohio
State. It's unrealistic to expect that.
Yep.
But that's what the offense needs if it's going to run with that tempo.
The breaks you got a drop touchdown pass. You got a couple overthrown balls on wide open receivers, but the freshman tailback didn't fumble.
Nope.
The quarterback didn't make any bad decisions. His bad throws were penalizing his team in the sense of field position and scoring, not turning the ball over. There's a huge difference in that. And to be fair, I thought Lego's 2 interceptions, one was an unbelievable play for Ohio State kid. Maybe we should have gotten the dogfight a little bit better there.
It was a tipped ball at one point.
And the one tipped ball at the goal line, but you're going in 14 there. It's 14-6 or 14-7.
The interception where it wasn't tipped, that was a bad throw. That needs to be over the top.
And that needs to be wrestled defensive backed by the wide receiver.
Wide receiver could do a better job. It was definitely underthrown.
But Lego's tipped ball at the goal line, I think that's going in for 21.
Point there, too. And let's remember, you're talking about the last 2 times Ohio State had the ball, they started off of turnover. So we're not talking early in the game that got you down 2 touchdowns. We're talking to tack the last couple on the board. You know, it literally was the last 2 times they had the ball came off those turnovers
that,
and resulted in touchdowns.
But that turnover from Lego was some of the unlucky that goes with that you need to beat Ohio State. If that ball doesn't get tipped there, it looked good from where you're looking at it. You think it's going to be a touchdown play. But that takes 14, that takes 17, that takes 21 off the board. You don't get a field goal. You don't get it because where are they at? The 12-yard line? 14-yard line? It was deep because that wasn't a long pass.
The interception or the fumble?
The interception was right at the goal line.
Yeah.
So the play, I think the Hoosiers had it inside the 15-yard line.
That's correct.
And so that's going to be a let's say they don't complete.
Ohio State 14 was the last line of scrimmage there.
There you go. So move it back 7, 21, 31. You make those.
Yeah.
So that's a -3 minimum, -7 maximum, and the momentum kind of stings you as well. But Indiana's defense put up a good fight. That was still first half. Remember, they lead 14-13 at halftime.
They took the ball down to the 2-yard line, Ohio 14, State 6. Did, and got held for a field goal. So the defense did its job there, no question about that.
They did. And what did that make it, 14-13? And that takes us to halftime?
Or was it 14-10? That would have been 7-6.
7-6,
then
okay.
We turned around
so that's going to make it. That's going to make it 14-3.
Yeah, right.
And now you're into that zone you talked about hey, our tempo, is it going to get us somewhere?
Big problems.
Well, the tempo was getting them big problems when they couldn't cash in at that opportune time for 3 or 7.
Yep.
Those are things you can't do against the second-ranked team in the country, and they showed you why. They take advantage, even though they go down and only get 3. How long was the defense on the field there? That was 12 plays, 85, or that was a 6-play drive, 8-play drive?
When they well, it was a nice return, if you remember.
Yeah, you got those
5 for 5, 58. That was a short drive for Ohio State, but
you could see a little of the gouging coming.
The other thing I wanted to note real quick, so we do have to hit a break too here. You never got anything in field position out of your kickoff return team.
That's normal for Ohio State.
Give Ohio State credit. I mean, they do. They do a great job on special teams. Urban Meyer usually is the head coach of the special teams. But Indiana did not get anything for field position when it came to the kickoffs.
Buck told that story on the airwaves that Ohio State takes away 2/3 of the field. They kick it in the corner as much as they can and force you to try to beat them to the wide side, and they pin you in with 4-star and 5-star recruits that can't start.
That's exactly right.
It's hard to get something out of your kicking in there. Williams almost broke when he got one out to about the 40, 42 once. Mm-hmm. Special teams while we're at it. Punter, Aussie kid's not bad.
No, he's fine.
Yeah. And that was
he missed a couple chances of pin inside the 10.
But he got a couple inside the 15.
I'm not getting crazy about it.
Yeah, those were his first college snaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Against Ohio State. Things will get easier
and
slower.
A lot of different angles. So, I mean, what he did there is minimize any kind of returns also, which is really even better. Well, I won't say better, but it's just as good. I mean, if you can get a nice boot out there and not let him get anywhere with it, I thought the punter was fine.
A lot of his balls rolled the proper way.
Yes.
They didn't have the backspin on them, and they don't have to be in the air for 60 yards. Maybe they want that on Sundays, but I don't care if it lands at the 35. If it rolls down to the 12, I don't care where it lands. It's where it ends.
As long as their returner is backing away from it and not picking up and running 30 yards, I'm cool with it. So.
No special team goofs for Indiana either. No. Usually,
just
in the
nothing
first,
really generated.
No, and I agree with that 100%. But the special teams didn't put them in a hole. You didn't see fumbled kickoffs where you give Ohio State a 15-yard field or a 25-yard field. That's why the fair fight was there. That's why the Hoosiers led late in the third quarter. But that third quarter ended with back-to-back touchdowns, 74 yards and 59 yards in a 3-minute span that knocked the air out of the building and the air out of the Hoosiers' defense and offense.
Yep, and that'll do it every time. So the Hoosiers lose the first one, but we've got another game like they do all season long. This time they head to Virginia this Saturday, 3:30 on ESPNU now. So that's been moved up the ladder just a bit. Got to take a quick break. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone.
Live from downtown Bloomington, it's In the Zone with Dave and Glass.
On News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. We're going to run through our programming notes real fast because there's tons of them here in football season, folks. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, we've got the Kansas City Chiefs at New England for the kickoff of the NFL season. 7:45 begins the broadcast tomorrow night. Friday night, we've got high school football returning. North is at South. Chalk Talk is 6:30 and kickoff is 7 o'clock Friday night for high school football. Saturday, we've got a college football doubleheader. Pitt is at Penn State at 3 and Auburn is at Clemson at 6:30. And then we've got your first Colts broadcast of the year Sunday. 3 o'clock is pregame with Bob Lamy and 4 o'clock kickoff as the Colts go to play the L.A. Rams. And a nightcap Sunday night will be the Giants at Dallas at 7:30. And then Monday night will be a short show Monday. Throughout the rest of the fall, we should be a long show, 6 to 7:45, but it'll be a short show on Monday, 6 to 6:30, as New Orleans and Minnesota is your first game of a doubleheader on Monday Night Football, and the L.A. Chargers against Denver is a late game on Monday. So there's lots going on there. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Hoosiers head to Virginia this weekend, 3:30. We mentioned it's on ESPNU. It was going to be on ACC Network, but it's all been bumped up. There's some weather-related
Miami's game was
cancellation.
So that moved right into that spot. Easy as that. And Miami gets not a chance. They don't have to go to Arkansas State. So they'll probably like that.
So the Hoosiers get another chance themselves. They get 10 days off to play or to prepare for that, which is maybe the best thing of all after all that hype, is to have an extra couple days to kind of flush it all out and get ready for the road trip. Going on the road, especially to an ACC team, is never easy. They lost their last trip easily to Virginia last time around. But I like what I saw on both sides of the ball. I really do. It didn't, you know, at the end of the day, live up to Ohio State. But this Ohio State team is every bit legit at this point on every side of the ball. So this is not the stick to measure your team with. Obviously, you got to go get the win. There aren't a lot of games where you look at the schedule and you go, man, that's an easy win, especially early in the season. Let's not forget, I mean, their first three games when they come back from their pre-conference schedule is Penn State on the road at home against Michigan, and Michigan State on the road, and Maryland on the road, who, by the way, had a nice win at Texas. So it doesn't get especially easy in the Big Ten. You've got to win these non-conference games at Virginia, home to Florida International, and home to Georgia Southern. And, you know, Virginia's going to punch you in the mouth a couple times. So how do they react to that after the big night? First one is, it's about your head. How do you react to the fact that you had all this hype and you didn't live up to, not your hype, but the hype of the night, and take advantage of that is the first step. And luckily you got some senior leaders that can help you with that.
Well, even better than that, you played on Thursday night. Virginia played on Saturday. You get two extra days. You get two extra days to cool off. You get two extra days to figure it out. You get two extra days of film. You get two extra days of everything. And that'll help a team that obviously has some things to learn. And before your first road trip of the year, your first road game that's not a bowl game in the Tom Allen era, a couple extra days, I don't think is going to hurt at all. And Virginia wasn't terribly impressive. They were up 21-10, scored with about 3 minutes left on their home field to go up 28-10. That was the final score against William and Mary. The quarterback was 27-39 for 262, three scores. Hey, Indiana's secondary is not one to be completely messed with. So that's a pretty good battle there. And good defense from good defensive stuff from UVA. Why Bronco Mendenhall's there, and he's a defensive coach very similar to Tom Allen. So they'll try to mix it up, try to give Lego some things that fake his eye out, and he gets two extra days of film to watch some of those tendencies. So that does help. Redshirt senior quarterback on the road. That's coming off a big game against a really good Ohio State team. I think Indiana should be feeling pretty good that they'll be able to get it moving in Charlottesville, 3:30 on Saturday.
No, and it's, you know, if the program is where you think it is, and I guess we'll go into that in a minute, then you should win this game. You know, it's not an easy trip. This is not a no-brainer. You're not going to, you know, to Akron or something like that. You're going to Virginia. But there's a lot to like coming out of that Ohio State game. You didn't see the running game at all because you were up against a different level, I think a player that you're going to see all the rest of the year up there, and it just got shut down for you. But you threw the ball all over the place against some of the best athletes in the Big Ten also, so you can't forget that part. I'm excited about this weekend. You know, a road trip at an ACC team, you got to show me. I mean, you do. You have to show me. This team needs to go out there, and it needs to beat Virginia and come home and get a couple more victories. Victory is going to be hard to come by once again this year, but it's got the senior quarterback. It's got the returning wide receiver who made every play possible. The defense did everything you'd want out of it for almost three quarters. This is a gettable game. Speaking of gettable games, the Colts this weekend go on the road to face the Rams, and appears as though Scott Tolzien is going to be your starting quarterback. We know Andrew Luck is not going to play. Suddenly there's a new backup in Jacoby Brissett after the trade for him to the Philip Dorsett, rather, to the Patriots to get Jacoby Brissett. Good-looking big kid, started a couple games for New England last year when Tom Brady was suspended. But that was an interesting trade, and not a lot of huge moves otherwise for the Colts. But they head on the road against a team that's going to start Jared Goff. You know, it's a team that's had a good defense for the last several years, but it's really not a team that ought to run up a lot of points on you. So is the Scott Tolzien experience the end of the world for the Rams, or for the Colts against the Rams? The Colts have got to win a couple of these games on the road, no matter who's at their quarterback position, because they just aren't against the best teams in the NFL. You got to take advantage of that.
Well, and the Colts depth chart came out with an interesting line selection today. It's Denzel Good at right tackle. It's Costanzo at left tackle. Vuji at left guard. Haig on the bench. Muhort at left right, whatever the other side of the line is. Good and Muhort, Vuji, and Castano. And Bond's going to be your center. So you've got some untested NFL guys on that line.
I'm not even believing it at this point in time. It just it's too odd to me. I mean, you got Kelly listed as your starter, too. And you know there's injuries in there.
He can't play for 6 weeks. Right. And Haig has been beat up in camp. And Muhort has had injuries in camp. The only good news I heard for Colts fans is Malik Hooker's practiced the last 2 weeks, and he's unlimited on Sunday.
Good.
So, well, that's something, because all your other draft picks are traded. They're gone. Philip Dorsett. Here's something damning I read today. Philip Dorsett was, somebody told one of the Indy Star guys this, looked exactly the same the day he was traded as the day he was drafted.
I believe it.
So you wonder why the Colts didn't want to stick around and wait again.
Yeah.
Well, if a guy keeps getting hurt because he's not in shape, and if a guy isn't making the commitment to do it, well, you might as well get something for him if you're going to release him. So why do you say, well, why do you get a third-string quarterback for, well, if you're going to release a guy, anyhow, you've done a nice piece of business.
Yeah.
That's what you've done. So you have to look at it through two different glasses.
And
there.
Scott Tolzien may not be here much longer anyway, so Brissett may have a couple years as a backup.
Correct. And Brissett's much cheaper than Tolzien. That's also the thing as well. But Brissett's not going to help you because he's not been here long enough to help.
And
if they're talking about Andrew Luck needing two or three weeks of practice to get an offense he knows by heart, what's Brissett going to do?
If fans of New England think Bill Belichick is going to turn Philip Dorsett into a guy who runs all of Julian Edelman's routes, I sincerely doubt that.
Well, Bill,
he is a run down the sideline kind of guy.
Belichick,
that's what he's there for.
Can do whatever he wants. He's got Dwayne Allen to do it, and it's the Colts, former Colts deal on that. So the Colts and Rams, no Aaron Donald for the Rams. Thankfully, he's holding out. His holdout is still going on, so he will not be in uniform, and he's one of their better players on all of that.
That's right. Antonio Morrison will start at middle linebacker.
Allegedly.
Vontae Davis is listed as your starter, but will be out a few weeks with a leg injury. So you got some young DBs going to be out there from the get-go.
Hey.
Play them.
What else are you going to do?
Let's see what we got. TJ Green did make the team, listed as strong safety.
Go play.
I mean, you'll have to play some corner too, but...
They're gonna have plenty of chances to get their defense tuned up with Todd Gurley. Hopefully the Colts can find some kind of running attack, and hopefully Tolzien looks as comfortable as he did against Pittsburgh. That's the only thing you can hope for. 3 o'clock, Bob Blamey has your pregame coming up on Sunday.
And again, we will be back Monday for an abbreviated In the Zone. Don't forget Friday night high school football. North is at South. Chalk Talk is 6:30 and kickoff is 7 o'clock. Again, check out WGCLradio.com for all of our broadcasting scheduling. It's all over the place, and we got a ton of it. We will talk to you Monday, folks. You've been in the zone.